Dylan, reel 14.
Talking about throwing the damaged destroyer, but must have been an extremely slow speed that you were doing.
Oh, I think the maximum was 6 knots. That was the... Otherwise, the tow could have parted, and... the other thing we had to watch was, if she started sinking, to slash the towing cable. Otherwise, she could have pulled us down a bit. I don't know whether it could happen. It didn't. But, as I say, the intention was to beach her somewhere in Iceland, which didn't happen. So we just joined up with the fleet again and come back as usual into Scapa Flow. And then that was...
Did you get any involvement with German surface ships in any of these convoys and actions? I'm thinking in terms of, the larger ships.
No, not... other than seeing the Bismarck, I never ever seen a German ship after that. I don't think many sailors actually. There was a battle off North Cape later on when the Scharnhorst was sunk, but that didn't affect.
You didn't get involved in that, did you? The Ashanti. You didn't get involved in the Scharnhorst.
No, I was abroad by then.
You'd left her?
Yes, I'd left. And then we after a little while, we went down to Rosyth, but boiler cleaned, and then the next thing we knew was the North African invasion, escorting all the ships to North Africa, Algiers and Oran. And
what are your memories of that?
Not very exciting, really. It seemed, I know there was a lot happening, but it seemed a bit of a climb down from Russian convoys and Malta. It seemed a bit of a climb down. There was no excitement. I don't think anyone ever got excited. It seemed too easy. It probably wasn't, but to us it seemed easy. And... then we took another convoy to Malta.
Wait, before we go there, the North African landings, you were escorting troop ships, and presumably.
Troop ships, and as they were landing from the landing craft, we were patrolling out to sea with the fleet, in case the Italian fleet should have ventured out, which it didn't. Then after a while we went up with the...
Did you get involved in any support of the army through bombarding objectives on land?
Once, somewhere, Mers El Kebir, that's the naval harbour in North Africa. What we were firing at, I do not know until this day. No, I've got no idea. And then they sent us up to a little place called Bone, with the reserves and the quality and the couple of cruisers. 4 destroyers and 2 cruisers. And each night, 1 cruiser would go up with 2 destroyers in patrol, come back, and then the other one would relieve them. That was... It wasn't very exciting. We used to go out... somebody would say, oh, we've had a contact somewhere. And when once or twice we got to see it, it was a blasted... electrical storm, or lightning that had been picked up by the radar. No, North Africa and not very exciting at all.
You had rapid changes, as you say, from Norway. It's from the Russian down to
we'd done to Russia and back, Malta and back, Russia and back, and then out to North Africa again.
You'd have many changes of uniforms, and presumably from heat.
No, we didn't carry much uniform.
Heat to cold.
Because you didn't, like a small ship, we didn't have much chance of getting anywhere to buy new. There was a lady in America used to make us comforts and send them over. May Hanrahan, they called her. Her husband was an ex-captain, United States destroyer in the First World War. And she sent us a lot of comforts. And in the end, the officers and the yeomen of signals on the bridge, we each got a Kapok-lined boiler suit that was guaranteed to keep you afloat. Whether it did, I'll never know, because I never got a chance to use it. We got them, and this lady sent us. We used to get various gifts from different... But you can never keep your kit up to date, because you never got alongside a big ship to get it up to date. So we just made do. As I said before, Onza wasn't fussy about dress at sea. And the normal dress at sea for lookouts and signalmen, etc., was the watch coats. And that...
Well, you didn't wear these immaculate white shorts and...
No. When we're out in the Med, most of the lads wore... with being a whole fleet destroyer, when they didn't have to carry whites. Most of the lads carried all kinds of trunks and football jerseys and... Oh, you mentioned that they had it. Civvy shirts and all sorts. No, as I say, we once went alongside the fleet flagship at sea to pick up some orders, where you throw a line over and you tie it up and you keep on a quarter deck. You know, the fire, the gun with the line on, then you get the heavier line and the heavier. She's supposed to be towing you, but you're trying to adjust your speed to her. Now, Onza was the kind of captain with a great coxswain, Chief Petty Officer Thomas. He come from the Mashona with us, and it would say, when he was watching, it would say, in a bit, Thomas. Now, bring her back. Just hold her there, Thomas. No coxswain, the Chief Petty Officer, no starboard 20, and he'd be wanting, just hold her there. Bring her down a couple of revs on the engines, Thomas. That was Onslow, real down to earth. He knew his job, and he knew that everybody else around him knew their job. So he didn't have to worry about... when he gave us a pep talk once, Michael, he says, if you're reporting anything, no matter who you are or where you are, don't start this, sir, 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 bawl out what it is. Never mind the sir. If you see a torpedo, shout, torpedo port, doesn't matter, sir, or anything. In that split second where you say sir, you could be hit. So he says, just bawl it out and we'll take the appropriate action. And that's what I come to in the end. You know, and really, really down to earth, brilliant.
What clothing did you wear in the worst of the winters on the Russian run?
What you could get hold of.
That must have been very cold.
I used to put, before we got these caper lined suits, I used to put a pair of pants, a couple of old sweaters that my aunts had knitted for me, me overalls, me a duffel coat or me watchkeeping coat, a towel round my neck to stop the water running down your neck. I didn't worry much about my hair. Of course, I had hair in those days, you know, not like now, you know. Some of them used to wear sou'westers, but in the end they didn't bother. It was running down your neck that was most uncomfortable. And some of the towels that were around their necks, you were throwing them away as dusters. But as I say, everyone was happy, and that was the main thing, you know. You got as much shelter as you could, but you don't get much shelter when a destroyer is hitting waves, it comes right over the bridge. Just wear anything that you thought, sea boots. Because I had these leather boots that I'd got off this German sailor, off that trawler, and I used to wear them. In fact, you might not believe it, when I come home, I still had them. I was driving buses with them in the winter time. They were real... There was no ersatz leather, as they called them. They were the real thing. They had brilliant equipment. The signal lanterns were outstanding. I think they had the finest equipment in the world.
Now, you've been through quite a bit of action by now. Now, you were mentioned in dispatches. Had you been mentioned in dispatches in any of the events that we've talked about?
Once for Russia and once for Malta.
What was the Russian one? What had you done to
nothing. I think they just put them in the bloody hat. And, you know, we'll give one for among the seamen branch and one for the signalman. To be honest with you, I don't think sailors, on the whole, were medal people. I don't... As I told you before, I never wear my medals. I never bother with them. I think to most sailors, you don't need a medal to know where you've been. You've done it. And I think that was quite sufficient. That was it. I never put any significance on medals. Onslow was pretty well honoured. In the end, he had... one of the few officers to the mine that had four DSOs. And of course, eventually become a KCGB, you know, and that. And
So Malta, again, was that just an award for doing your duty?
Just doing your duty,
you hadn't done anything exceptional?
I couldn't see anything exceptional to the best of my knowledge, no. A few ratings got a DSM, especially those that took part in the salvage of the Somali that went in the motorboat and took the tow line over and all this lot. And I believe Admiral Lewin got a DSC for that. And I think Tony Bailey, the first lieutenant, got a DSC. Onslow got a DSO, of course. And... that was it. And I don't think anyone ever attached much importance in the Navy to medals. You couldn't be like a soldier, we'll say, and go and run and hug hand grenades. You had to go where the ship went, you know. And if you were unlucky enough to meet a German ship, well, you just done the best you could. But no, I don't think sailors were in for heroics or out like that. And that was the first time we went to Malta with a convoy, we didn't land. The second time we landed, and we went into Frenchman's Creek, into the dry dock, to get, I think we had something wrong with the propeller. And then the fleet engineer come on board and diagnosed as unfit for operational service. And then we come home to Gibraltar.
Did you get ashore at Malta?
I went ashore. I wasn't impressed. And later on in life, I went on a holiday to Malta, and I was less impressed.
Why was that?
Well, on the holiday I went, I found you could, if you hired the car, you could see Malta in a couple of days. During the war, as you know, it was notorious for ladies of leisure, let's put it that way. And to this day, you find a lot of people, including the association I belong to, we put a stained glass window in St. Thomas's, the Martyr Church in Newcastle, to the convoys and to the bravery of the people to Malta. Now, unknown to a lot of people, there was a lot of Maltese who were not necessarily used in the war, were shipped to Alexandria. Not a lot of... Probably not a lot of people know that. So there wasn't a lot of Maltese on the island. And of course, when you went ashore, it was what the sailors called the gut. That was where the ladies of leisure sat in the parlours, etc., you know. But then, once again, you see the Ashanti, it was all booze. And didn't worry about women, it didn't seem to bother about women. It was all drink, with a bad name for being a drunken crew. Never got us in trouble, the work was carried out, but get ashore, the first thing was a pint. Oh, we were pretty well noted for that wherever we went. Oh, God.
But you see the damage to Malta, no doubt, in that, the Grand Harbour.
No, I didn't, actually. No, the Grand Harbour didn't look any different to me when we went in war than when I looked in peace. Because it's solid granite, so I don't think they've done it. I didn't see any damage, I must be fair. But of course, I'm getting, when I'm talking about the war, this was early after the North African line, early 43, where the threat of bombing and invasion by the Italians had practically, they were thinking then of invading Sicily, so the threat had gone. So it was more or less back to normal. No, I was never impressed by Malta. No.
But you returned from the torch landings and your second Malta convoy and came back up to Scapa, did you say?
No, we operated in Malta just back and forwards in North Africa, unfit for operations. And we just escorted various ships. And then we come back in May 1943. But we didn't come back. We went to, what was it, the Island of Dogs up the Thames? And then we brought her home, took her into dock there, and we paid off completely, everybody. That was the last I seen of the Ashanti. I met Captain Onslow later on in the Far East in Sabang. I don't know, he was one of the Q boats. I'm not quite sure what he was on. And I went over to see him there. Actually, we're tied up next to him. And I asked his flag lieutenant, could I come over and see Captain Onslow? He was a captain then. Captain D4 he was then. And he says, well, I don't know. I said, if you go and tell him, sir, just mention the Ashanti. He says, right, you bugger, Onslow was out like a shot. Oh, I was, when we got on talking then, he says, I miss the excitement. And he only had a little destroyer with single guns. He didn't have the double, he says, it's not the same as the Ashanti was.
It was the lucky ship, the Ashanti.
Oh, extremely lucky. We were missed by bombs, torpedoes, mines, you name it. Men were not the only one to be lucky. There was other lucky ships, you know. And then there were some ships that were always unlucky. Some captains were unlucky. Now, Joe Selby, who was on the Mashona with me, he was lucky. He'd done the Russian convoys, and I think it was the onslaught he was captain of. And that was when it was really rough up there. You know, in the winter time, when Sherbrooke got the VC on the Onslow. It was rather funny. We operated with him once. He commanded the Onslow, and we had the Onslow commanding the Ashanti, you know. But there was Sherbrooke, Onslow, Jackie Broom. One or two that were real outstanding destroyer captains, and Onslow was one of them. It was.
What as the war went on through the time that we're talking about, conscripts were becoming into your crew as replacements or additions. How
we get conscripts, hostilities only. They blended in pretty well, but the knowledge. Some of them had only maybe 6 weeks training. And that some were seasick. I mean, some peacetime sailors were seasick. Of course, the old joke, you know, when you got a conscript, when they come, oh, go on, eat some nice big juicy chops, hoping they would leave the buggers alone that you can eat. You know. But on the whole, they were pretty good. They were pretty good. I've got no complaints against them. They've done their job, and that's all that's satisfied. If they pulled their weight, that's all you ask for.
And they performed well in action, then?
They did. They performed just as well, maybe slightly slower. But it's rather a funny thing that... When you've been on a ship like some of us have been on the tribal for 4 years, you could practically run from your mess deck to the bridge, know how many ladders, mop bumper, and total darkness, gun crews and everything. And yet the funny thing, of all the years during the war, I can never remember bumping into anyone while I was running. They tell me on big ships that if you were going forward, you went down the starboard side. If you were going aft, you come up the port side. Whether that's true, I don't know. That didn't apply to the... No, I don't remember ever bumping into anyone. No.
In those days, ships were adopted by cities in the country. Was the Ashanti an adopted ship, do you know?
Other than peacetime, going down to Takoradi, to Ashanti land, where she got the gold thing. No, I think the whole 60 soil flotilla and what remained of it were kept going by Mrs. Hanrahan from America and her friends out there. They kept sending us balaclavas and gloves and socks and that. In fact, they were very good to us. Eventually, she sent a host of stuff out to British destroyers. She was, and after the war was over, they flew her over, or brought her over, and they gave her a, we all contributed so much, to a silver model of a tribal. And she was presented with that in London. I don't know who presented it, because I wasn't there. Probably one of her ex-captains, I don't know. Yes, she was a very good lady.
So you were paid off. What happened to you then?
Paid off, come home, went on leave and back to barracks.
This was where, Chatham?
Chatham, yes. And there was a chap complaining one day about he was getting a draft to combined operations and he didn't want to go. So I says, hey, look, I says, we'll go and see the commander if I can take it. So I went in front of the commander and he says, why? I says, well, I've had about 4.5 years at sea. I says, I think I could do with a little bit of rest. But it was all lies, you know. It was only so I could see my family, because I knew the combined op base was in Scotland. Oh, that's granted. So from there I went trained in combined operations in Dundonald, which is near Irvine in Scotland. Well, I could nip home at night and see my wife and my family.
When you went down to Chatham, you'd be meeting chaps who were senior ranks who'd never been to sea, never never done anything in effect. How did you get on with those?
Well, how could you know? For all you know, they could have gone through a tougher time than what you'd gone through. I mean, there were probably some stalwarts, old three badges from the First World War, that may have been unfit for sea duty. But you never held that against anyone. Everyone had their job to do, and I don't think there was any skivers, as the saying would go. No, I never gave them a thought in barracks. I was too willing to get out of barracks. I didn't like barracks. It was too much, too regimental. Too many officers kicking about, and petty officers and whatnot, you know. And I didn't like it at all. Didn't like barracks.
Were you just waiting there for a draft in barracks? Or were you having to go through all the training and drilling?
As a yeoman of signals, you said you just went back to the signal school to see if there was anything that had... And then after going back, when we went to combined operations, it was a totally different service. Because there was no flags to hoist. It was all mostly by lamp.
And so you went back to combined operations as a yeoman signal?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I had my own little... I went back to what they called up there Royal Navy Beach Signal Sections, which eventually, when the landings took place, you went ashore with the first wave with your lamps, etc. And then when the beach master wanted, we'll say, I want that ship and it's got tanks on, you call them up. And it was very quiet, quiet.
So what exactly were you doing up in Scotland?
We went to the commander course. Well, you can imagine sailors on commander courses, we were damned hopeless. But in any, it was supposed to toughen you up. as if being at sea and the destroyer toughened you up enough. That lasted a fortnight.
And what kind of training was that?
Oh, running over mountains, firing guns, and God knows what. When, I mean, a gun to a signalman is a totally foreign sort of thing, because we'd never fired them before. And when they got us on these, I don't know what you would call them, the army used them. No. They go on a tripod.
The Bren gun.
Aye. You're bugging, we nearly broke my shoulders, you know, because we weren't expecting them. Because signalmen never fired guns at sea. The only thing we ever fired at sea was maybe a very pistol, which was nothing, you know. So after that, we went on.
Was it military drill as well that you were getting?
No, not. How can you military drill sailors? Signalmen especially. I mean, some of them didn't know the right from the left. But we got through it, and then we went down to Poole in Dorset. Is it Dorsetshire? And we trained on landing craft down there. Just the same thing, landing on beaches. And then...
What time are we now? We must be approaching D-Day, are we?
No, we're getting ready for D-Day. We had a few sailings into the channel. False, you know. And then D-Day appeared. And
now, just to get the picture of what it was like down in that area when you arrived there with... Obviously, a huge build-up going on.
There was hundreds of thousands of mostly soldiers and Americans, because all they needed the Navy for was bombardment, which the sailors would already be afloat. The signalmen telegraphers who would go in with the first wave, and I've seen the case where, will you call that ship up and ask her to bombard target for the army or something like that.
And that was your training? In
that was our training.
But round about you had this huge build-up of army and military. Was this the first time you'd met Americans?
We'd had one or two Americans with us on the convoys to Russia. We had the Tuscaloosa and the Wichita, the two cruisers, and a few destroyers. And then we had the battleship Washington for a while. But of course, with their war breaking out, they went away to the Far East, which was obvious. But we still had some American destroyers would bring the convoys halfway across the Atlantic, and then our escorts would pick them up. But I never really got into them.
You did mention the fact that their destroyers weren't really equipped for the northern seas.
They were what is known these days as flush deckers. They come from the bows to the stern. They didn't have a forecastle brake like ours. They were built for the Pacific, which is normally calm. Oh, no, they weren't as good as our destroyers. No. There was one. I don't know what it was. But he was very... Captain Moon. I don't remember what they called the destroyer. But he made quite a name for himself in the Russian convoys.